Good evening, everyone. It's great to be with you here tonight. Now, keep your distance. Not too long ago, that was a slogan for learner drivers everywhere, but now it's got a new meaning, hasn't it? Keep your distance. We hear it everywhere. We hear it in the supermarkets. We have it here in church. Everywhere you go, keep your distance, whether it's 1 meter or 2 meters or whatever the latest is. Most of us, I guess, will have been told off by others. I've even been shouted at for supposedly not keeping my distance. Or maybe we've been the ones to tell others off for the same thing. So as a result, life has meant recently staying at home. The special occasions of life, those meals out, the sporting events, the concerts, well, they've all been banned. No social gatherings, even with our closest family, unless we live with them. And we've had enough, haven't we? Quite simply, we have had enough. It's not how we want life to be. We just want this to be over. And Boris has now given us the date, 21st of June, 111 days to go. That's when venues will reopen, large events allowed, party time. Well, I guess we do have to say we hope so. Strictly speaking, what Boris said was no earlier than the 21st of June. And there are just vague references that there might still be some social distancing measures, TBC, apparently. Well, we will see, but it is agony, isn't it, this wait? We are longing for it. Will social distancing ever end? But why is that the question that we have raised for an event like this from church, thinking about Jesus and the Bible? Well, it turns out the Bible has more to say about social distancing than we might have realized. In fact, what it says about social distancing very much speaks into our situation at the moment with the coronavirus. So to see that, we're going to look very briefly at a man who labored under very severe social distancing restrictions, far more severe than we've had to put up with these last few months. And as Jason mentioned, we're going to look at Matthew's gospel. The incident is recorded there. Now, Matthew, one of Jesus' 12 disciples, so he lived with Jesus, he knew Jesus very well, and he recorded for us what he saw and heard. So we're in Matthew chapter 8, and I'm going to read for us the first 4 verses. When Jesus came down from the mountain, great crowds followed him. And behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, if you will, you can make me clean." And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, "I will, be clean." And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a proof to them." 3 things for us to notice from what we've just heard in that reading. First of all, the ever-present shadow of death. The ever-present shadow of death. So as we join this account, Jesus has just delivered his famous Sermon on the Mount. He's literally on the way down the mountain when we're told, and behold, a leper came to him. Now, in today's world, leprosy tends to describe what is technically called Hansen's disease, which has dark skin lesions, nerve damage, consequently an inability to feel pain. That might lead to a loss of fingers or toes or even more. So that's what we think when we hear the word leprosy. But that's not actually what the Bible has in mind, or Matthew, in this passage, because Matthew is working with an understanding of leprosy that came from the Old Testament section of the Bible before Jesus. And so, if you like, in medical terms today, the kind of leprosy that Matthew is talking about would actually not be considered that serious. It wasn't particularly infectious. You might even say it was a relatively mild condition which would cause white, kind of flaky skin over the body. And yet, having said that, let me just read for you a couple of verses from the Old Testament telling us, well, what to do with a person who is suffering from this sort of leprosy. Quote, The leprous person who has the disease shall wear torn clothes and let the hair of his head hang loose, and shall cover his upper lip and cry out, "Unclean, unclean." He shall remain unclean as long as he has the disease. He is unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. Well, can you imagine living like that? So yes, we're in lockdown today, but obviously this is far worse. Well, not least because for us, we're all pretty much in the same boat when it comes to lockdown. But not for the leper. He could see others meeting, socializing, enjoying all those things, but he was definitely excluded and not welcome. And also for us, there is this light at the end of the tunnel. But for the leper, there'd be no 21st of June or any other date. The only hope he had was if the disease, the skin condition, would clear up. But that was the problem. Yes, the medical symptoms of this leprosy were not especially serious, but they were usually incurable. So therefore, the leper had a chronic, lifelong condition. So you might ask, well, why then all those restrictions? And this is now bringing us really to the heart of the issue. Because if leprosy wasn't really that contagious, we might say, or serious, why all of this? And it turns out the answer is that, well, this sort of leprosy, it wasn't deadly, but it was death-like. It looked like death, and therefore it was associated with death. And so, if you like, these regulations, the aim was be that this would be a reminder, not just to the leper, but to everyone, of actually what was true for everybody, namely their mortality. Which, of course, is what coronavirus has done to us. Do you remember normal life, whatever that was? Well, during that, most of us tried and were often successful in keeping death at arm's length, out of the picture. And we managed it maybe reasonably well a lot of the time. But it's fair to say coronavirus has blown that apart. Because death has been in our face. We may have known someone who died. Certainly the news coverage is relentless. And then every change to our routine, subconsciously and sometimes, we just know this is because there is this death out there. We just can't push it away far enough. Next slide, please, says Chris Whitty. But what comes up on the slide? Well, you look at the measure on the vertical axis, and again, it's number of deaths. The death toll we are very pleased to see is now falling, which is brilliant. But still, yesterday in the UK, 104 deaths. So yes, we do want social distancing to be over, but of course that speaks to much more that we are longing for. We just want this whole thing over. Now, of course, we want the death to stop because we do care about others. But also, we want to get rid of this in-our-face constant reminder of mortality. And presumably the inhabitants of Israel also didn't particularly want to dwell on death. But there they were out and about going for a walk with a family and then they heard that voice, unclean, unclean. Again, no escape. But that was the design for them to know, to be reminded, death is unavoidable. A reality that must be addressed. That is the problem. So there we are, the ever-present shadow of death. Next, we see that Jesus is willing and able. Jesus is willing and able. Matthew has set the scene of the leper. He then continues, "And behold, a leper came to Jesus and knelt before him, saying, 'Lord, if you will, you can make me clean.'" I wonder what you make of that leper's request. Just you look at the language that he uses. Notice he doesn't ask for healing, at least not directly, but rather to be clean. That shows actually what was the leper's greatest concern, his most pressing need. Not so much the medical side of the condition, although itchy as that may have been. More, he wanted to be clean. And that has nothing to do with hygiene. Rather, being unclean is a description of this leper's inability to meet with others, and actually meant more than that. Above all, really, it meant he couldn't go anywhere near the temple. That is the place where God symbolically dwelt. He was barred. But again, this is all part of what this was meant to teach the people. It was saying that God can't tolerate anything to do with death. That can't come anywhere near him. That actually is quite good news. Well, very good news, because you might ask, well, what is God like? And here's what this is all teaching us. God can't stand death. He just wants nothing to do with it. Death doesn't belong with God. God is all about life and life to the full. That's the good news. But of course, then to a people tainted with death, which actually is all of us, if represented here by the leper, well, there's a problem. We can't go anywhere near God. And notice also what else the leper says. He says, doesn't he, if you will, you can make me clean. So it's obvious this leper doesn't doubt Jesus' power. That's what many people today might have an issue with, but the leper is sure. He's obviously heard of the miracles Jesus has done, maybe even seen them. No, the issue for the leper is Jesus willing? Now, why would he ask that? But of course, if you think about it, the leper has experienced a lifetime, if you like, of people crossing over to the other side of the road, always. He was excluded, he was ostracized. Would Jesus be any different? Well, look down to verse 3, if you can see it. And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. So here is one of the many well-known miracles of Jesus. Although maybe we're thinking, now that we know what leprosy means, well, okay, but sorting out a mild skin condition, is that really such a big deal? So today, maybe you'd simply give someone the right ointment and that would manage it perfectly well. But Matthew actually puts this miracle in his gospel in a very prominent position. He wants us to say, look at this, this really does matter. And that's because what the leprosy symbolized, death, exclusion from God, that is what Jesus is dealing with. But still, I guess the cynic might say, well, okay, but healing a skin condition symbolizing death is a far cry from actually dealing with death. To which Matthew would say, well, fair point, but why don't you read on? And sure enough, just the very next chapter, chapter 9, Jesus takes hold of the hand of a corpse, but the young girl rises. And then you read right through to the end of the gospel, and Jesus himself is dead and buried, but not for long. And this defeat of death by Jesus really is not just good news for Jesus. Imagine the scene, someone is walking down the street, they're coughing, sneezing. In fact, you can tell they're struggling to breathe. Then you notice they've got a big sign they're carrying, it says, I've got COVID. Next thing you know, they're hit by a car, they're lying in the street and they are gushing blood. They cry out to you, please come and help me, stem the blood. Well, what do you do? Well, the leper, tainted by this deadly, contagious uncleanness, cries out to Jesus. And what does Jesus do? Well, he reaches out and touches him. Now, of course, that's compassionate. But more than that, should anyone else touch that leper, well, they too would contract the uncleanness. But not with Jesus. With his touch, if you like, the R number drops to zero. Well, in fact, we could say even more than that, it's driven into the negative. Because now the transmission goes the other way. Not from the leper to Jesus, but from Jesus to the leper. And what is transmitted is not uncleanness, but now the leper is clean, like Jesus. That is, with touch from Jesus in place of death, comes life. Here is the one who can reverse the direction and make it go the other way. So the sharp amongst us will have noticed my first heading was actually wrong. I said the ever-present shadow of death. Well, without Jesus, that is true. The shadow of death will then grow inevitably, irresistibly, until, if you like, it catches us up. But with Jesus, here is the one who can roll back that shadow for good. No more death, life instead. The shadow of death, Jesus is willing and able. And then one final point for us here. Pay attention to the data. Pay attention to the data. Now, at that recent press conference of Boris, his new mantra, it seems, was data, not dates. That is, the dates he had just announced for progressing out of lockdown, well, they weren't fixed, he said. It was all under continual review. What mattered was the data, which fits with what we've heard so many times, isn't it, during this period. It's all going to be evidence-based, follow the science, act accordingly. Pay attention to the data. Well, look now what Jesus said to the leper who was now healed and cleansed, verse 4. And Jesus said to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a proof to them." Now here Jesus is following the protocol established back in the Old Testament. So imagine the priest on duty in the temple that day. He may well never have come across a cured leper before. In fact, because it was unheard of, but yes, the priest checked this man's skin, and it's true, it was clear. You can just imagine the priest might then ask him, "Well, what's your secret?" And the ex-leper just might have replied, "Well, you, the priest, can diagnose leprosy, but I've met the man who can cure it." Well, Jesus Christ came into our world, our dying world, to make a difference, which he did. And there is proof. There was proof for that priest. Then there'd be proofs for everyone else who knew the leper. And so for us, there is data, if you like, for us to check out. And the message Matthew would love us to take on board is, well, pay attention to it. Listen to it. There is this proof. So try and get a hold of a copy of Matthew's Gospel. It's not very big. It's in any Bible. It's available online. And simply read it. But read it engaging your brain. Ask the questions. Could this be true? What does this evidence, historical evidence, show? So pay attention to the data. Winston Churchill famously said, "Never let a good crisis go to waste." Well, this has been a crisis this past year. It's been uncomfortable and unsettling. And we hope it'll soon be over, the social distancing and all the rest. Let's get on with our lives. But never let a good crisis go to waste. That is, this crisis has brought to the fore what maybe we'd rather not think about. But even when the crisis recedes, the issue of death will still be there. Trying to get it out of our minds, well, it'll still only work for so long. So why not discover what can make a lasting difference? Or rather, who? Because Jesus is willing and able.
Brilliant. And then I've just got one to get us thinking. Who was Matthew? Like, was he there when this happened? Or, yeah, why is he writing all of this?
That's right. So I mentioned he was a disciple. In fact, he was a tax collector. So therefore, he could make very accurate records, which he put to good use in writing this account. But Matthew inserts himself in the story that he writes. So again, it's only in chapter 9. We're just told Jesus passed on from there. He saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth and said to him, "Follow me," and he rose and followed. So yes, Matthew was with him, lived with him, experienced the miracles and what Jesus said, and he recorded it for us so that we can see and hear for ourselves what Jesus did.
Brilliant. I'm just thinking, like, what sort of environment was Matthew in? Would COVID make any sense to him? You kind of alluded to the kind of picture of death in the leper.
I don't know about COVID, but I think we can now imagine a little bit more what life was like for a leper. I mean, not quite the same, but maybe in some way just grasp how difficult that would be. But I think the parallels in terms of the reason that the Bible has these restrictions for the leper and all that they had to do and go through and couldn't do and couldn't do was to make this issue of death front and center. Because like for us, we'd rather not think about it, and we go through a lot of life not thinking about it, but coronavirus has made us all think about it. We might have talked about it so much, maybe, but we lie awake at night, we've seen what's happening to others, people are clearly very concerned, and that shows in the way they live, and if unspoken, it's still there, death.
Brilliant. Well, if Jesus has defeated death, then how can people still die today?
That's right. So you've got to work out the timing. So death is defeated because Jesus rose again from the dead. I'll just read a verse that Jesus, a sentence that Jesus spoke. I'm going to switch into John's gospel, which is maybe cheating, but another disciple of Jesus recorded what Jesus said. Jesus was at a graveside, and Jesus said to, it was Martha, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die." So clearly there, Jesus recognizes that believers will die, although he says, but they will then live. So they will rise again to be with him. But at the same time, he says, everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. So yes, we'll physically die, but the most important thing is to have life with God, or eternal life, as it's called. And that will go on forever. So compared to having that, our physical death is no longer such the big deal that it was. It's still sad, and others will grieve, but we have begun a relationship, back in relationship with God, with the Lord Jesus, that will never end, and even death won't interrupt it. So the reason death is still here is because God will put everything right one day, but when he does, that will be the end, and then there'll be no more time for others to come in. So we're in a little in-between period. As the message of Jesus goes out, there's still suffering, clearly, and death, although the believer knows they are ultimately secure, but the aim is for more to hear about Jesus and trust him and come to know him.
I think this is basically the same question, but along the lines of not just death, but why didn't Jesus get rid of diseases? Like, why are we still facing disease along the way?
Yeah. So again, in Matthew 8, I mean, Matthew 8 has a lot of thinking about diseases and death and how Jesus fits in. And it does say, Matthew 8, verse 17, that all these healings that Jesus was doing, says, this was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah. He took our illnesses and bore our diseases. So that's a quote from Isaiah 53, a prophecy from 700 years before, very accurately describing what would happen when Jesus died. And at the cross, Jesus was taking on the word is sin, the way we've turned against God, but then all that follows from that, diseases, sicknesses, death, even the judgment of God. So those things ultimately have been dealt with once and for all. But again, there is a delay until the full experience comes in, because at the end of Matthew's gospel, Jesus tells his disciples and us to go to all nations and make disciples of all peoples. And to give time for that, we don't yet experience in full all that he has won for his people. But as we look at his resurrection, we can be sure that that will follow.
Brilliant. You've answered this question, so don't go. But somebody is asking, why isn't Jesus around now? And that it is that time window that you were discussing. Is that right? That there's a delay before he returns?
There's a delay, and we wish he was on earth. And it's right to want to be with Jesus. If you know him, it will be wonderful. But actually, we're in a better position than Matthew and the other disciples were then, because we have his spirit to help us. And the Bible says, because we've got these accurate records of what Jesus said and did, we don't actually need to be there because we can see it and hear it. And yet Jesus is now helping us by his spirit to live for him and to get the message about him out.
I love some of these questions. People concerned for others. It's great to see. First of all, people concerned about this poor person run over by the bus. What should Christians do if someone is injured like that? Surely only Jesus could really do anything about it. But, you know, just some thoughts on how to respond to that sort of...
Well, Phoebe, who's a member of this congregation, is soon going to start a job going around in that emergency ambulance. She's an A&E doctor. Yeah. So just phone Phoebe and get her there very, very quickly, I think, is the answer. I think part of the reason that little picture was, it wasn't meant to say, what should we do? It was just that actually we can't because, well, we might be able to help, but the danger is clearly that the infection is going to come in my direction and I might be able to help. But whereas Jesus is different. So that's why he was compassionate, and that comes up in all sorts of places. But he wasn't compassionate in the sense of risking catching the disease, because that's the point. He is different. He could go up and touch them, and it would go in the other direction. He is unlike anyone else. And so that's why the answer to the puzzle is Jesus is different, and that is a wonderful thing.
Brilliant. Two questions concerned about the leper themselves. Why couldn't he go to the temple? Just because he has a disease, it wasn't his fault. Why was he punished? And then isn't it a bit unfair to lepers if they were just the representative death and they suffer segregation? Why the strong symbolism? Did people really understand the meaning behind it? So why did he get such a hard deal?
I think these are great questions because these are the things you would think about when you consider these things, the way it was set up in the Old Testament. So the language there of punishing, unclean doesn't necessarily mean sinful. So it doesn't mean that an individual leper was actually in a position of sin. That's the Bible word for having turned against God. It would be sinful, to use that word, for the leper to go to the temple because he'd been told that was not acceptable. But in terms of having the condition, that wasn't sinful. It was unclean. But unclean doesn't necessarily mean sinful. So in that sense, but then, yes, all these questions about, is it fair? I mean, this is like the wider question. Why is there suffering in the world? Why does it impact some people rather than others? One answer, definitely with a leper, is God is trying to wake up Israel and us as we ask these very questions and say, but, you know, what about his family life or his travel? He can travel. He can go to all these nice places. And the first answer is, don't you get it? This is trying to say there is something more important, which translates to today. We think, oh, I can't travel. I can't see this gathering. Now, all those are good God-given things, but God is trying to wake us up and say there is a bigger issue on the table, the issue of death and the judgment it deserves. So, first of all, it should drive you to that and realize that's what it's saying is important. And then there'll be other things to say in answer to those sort of questions.
Brilliant. Do send in your questions. We'll just have a few more minutes of questions. So if you have one, send it in now so we don't miss out the opportunity on that. Just why did Jesus tell them to go to the priests? Like, what was going on with that request?
Well, it shows a number of things, doesn't it? It shows in that day, it was the priest who was the only one, like I said, he could diagnose leprosy or its cure. Interesting, you read Leviticus 13, which is the chapter of the Bible which speaks lots about leprosy, and chapter 14, and it talks about this, and the priest would diagnose leprosy and diagnose a cure. And yet it turns out very few people would ever be cured from it. So the Bible was setting up, you know, wasted a lot of space saying that when there was no need until you came to Jesus. And so in Israel in that day, the way it was set up, it was the priest who could pronounce the leper clean. And so Jesus worked with the whole system that the Old Testament had set up in terms of ritual cleansing and purity. So it almost is telling us you still need to pay attention to that, because although we no longer live under those systems, it has a lot to teach us. And so it would have been proof to the priest, obviously, but also proof to those who the leper might have run off to speak to first. Jesus says, no, do it by the book. And that will be the biggest proof. And the biggest proof, not only of his cleansing, but ultimately, there is one who can do this and reverse it.
Brilliant. So clearly that leper, now cleansed, can be reintegrated into society. Is there any comment on how Jesus can do that for people today, that reintegration?
So all of the conditions that you look at in Matthew's gospel. You know, there's all sorts of things. Leper, there's paralytic, there's blind, there's deaf. You know, all these issues, the mute and the dumb, then they all point to the problem that because of the way we've treated God, our relationship with him is spoilt and broken. And all these things that spoil life that drive some of these questions are all meant to be a megaphone, as C.S. Lewis put it, to rouse us and to wake us up. So if we realize there's a problem, the question is, but what is the problem? And it's not ultimately my health. It is the fundamental issue of, am I right with God? And so all of this is to drive us to that question. And that's when, you know, Jesus makes then all sorts of promises. In these chapters, he says, follow me. So in the midst of all of this, he's asking people to follow. And that's a part of it. And then just a bit later, chapter 11, Jesus then, he's in chapter 11, John the Baptist asks him, are you the one who was to come, the promised king of God? Jesus says, look at what I do. And one of those is heal the lepers, because this is meant to be a sign showing uniquely this is God's king. Once you get it, Jesus says, I've come. Chapter 9 says, I've come for sinners. I've come for the people who failed. Chapter 11, he then says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden. I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. So he is simply saying, if you've grasped what the problem is, that I'm the one who can meet it, well, come to me, and he will give the life that he gives.
Brilliant. Just a few more, just as we kind of wrap up, but why don't we see those miracles today?
Well, that's helpful because I'll read the beginning of chapter 11, what I just referred to. So John the Baptist, he heard about what Jesus has been doing, and so he had a question for him. Are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another? So he's saying the Old Testament promised one to come. John had thought that was Jesus, and now he wants confirmation. Jesus, is that you? Jesus says, go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, and the dead are raised up, and the poor have good news preached to them. So just from that passage, it shows those miracles are meant to show who Jesus is. Obviously, they are good news for the person who's experienced the healing. But in terms of being miraculous and obvious, they're kind of signs. What they say is, look at Jesus. And so the pattern of the Bible would expect us to lead, that's why they were there. So we wouldn't expect them today because they've done their work of pointing to Jesus in that way. If behind the question is, but does God care about these conditions today? The answer is very much yes. And we can pray for them and God heals, but not necessarily in a dramatic, miraculous way like this, because, well, in the way the Bible set it up, that wouldn't so obviously point us to Jesus. And remember again, the more important thing is to come to Jesus than to have my medical conditions cured.
Brilliant. This is clearly someone who's been studying Matthew's gospel with us on a Tuesday evening, but you mentioned that this is Jesus coming down the mountain. Any significance? He's just been teaching that this is then the first miracle we get afterwards.
If you know Matthew's gospel, if you know the Bible, Matthew's doing lots of things that remind you of things that have happened before, because it all actually helps us understand. Mountains are significant in the Bible. People often meet with God on mountains, so Jesus met with his people there. If the mountain where Jesus taught is a bit like Moses teaching up the mountain, you might think, well, does this parallel things that happened after Moses came down the mountain? And it turns out it does. And one place I particularly want to look is Numbers 12, because there Miriam, Moses' sister, has leprosy. And there you can see more proof that leprosy was considered death-like. So yes, there are more patterns. One outbox of that is Moses was sort of involved in a healing by looking to the Lord, whereas here it's clear Jesus does it directly. So here is one better than Moses.
Brilliant. And just to kind of conclude, why do we study Matthew's gospel on a Tuesday? Why should someone join us? Why should someone even start reading Matthew's gospel on their own for the first time, perhaps?
It's ultimately because we all need Jesus. And that's what the gospel is all about. And we need the life that he can give. So actually, Matthew's gospel is for everyone. By that, I mean, if you're not a Christian yet, or still thinking it through, or have questions, well, the best thing to do is to look at the evidence for Jesus and to check it out. And maybe if you read that yourself, obviously, but then if you can go somewhere where others, if you've got questions, might be able to point you to where in Matthew he answers them. But then, likewise, those of us who've started following Jesus or getting to know him better, well, just that, we want to get to know him better. And that previous question just pointed at the richness that you can read Matthew straight through. You'll have questions, but I hope you'll understand the gist of it. But then once you've come to know Jesus, you want to know as much as you possibly can. And as you realize, Matthew seems to think Jesus is the fulfillment of everything that came before. You think, well, there's obviously lots, lots more to learn about Jesus. And so we meet to find that out.
Brilliant. Thank you, Aaron, once again.